Everyone's wearing sweaters.
Dude, it's cold.
It's that time of year. As I was saying, should we start every day with a white chocolate donut?
Yes.
So apparently all you have to do is these fancy New York coffee shops is just say, I want to lick the glass because the donut looks so good, and they'll give you a free donut, because that's what happened to me this morning. It's a pretty good way to start a Tuesday, I got to say. Wait, Wednesday. So, you know, is just take that strategy, shop that thing all around Manhattan.
Is this like some hack where you just go to donut shops and you're like, I want to lick the glass, and they give you...
But they have to be hipsters, and you have to like connect with the hipsters, you know?
Sounds like more work than just paying for the donut.
It's worth it. It could be worth it, though. The payoff can be big. You know, hipsters, they have a longing to connect, even though they don't show it. They're just doing their hipster coffee thing. But really, if you talk to them, then they're very excited and give you a free donut. So I think deep down, they really just want to have a normal conversation with you.
Nice.
We just put up probably the last video in the async testing series, at least for now. We always come back. Sometimes we can always come back and add a video to the end. But it's a natural breaking point where we went through, you know, run later to start and how the waiters interact with the test, and then wait for and wait until, and then finally register waiter is like the big daddy, where you like get to just tell the testing setup that something's happening and you don't care how.
Yeah,
so it's pretty cool.
You enjoyed making the series a lot.
I did, because it reminded me of when I was first getting into Ember. It was like through D3. I was at a financial software company doing like some data visualization charts, and I was doing Backbone in D3, and then found Ember and was like blown away by Ember. So I was doing D3 stuff there, and you know, I was just like learning about testing, because testing has always been big in Ember. But I just, with the D3 stuff, I didn't know. I was not experienced enough. I was like just starting out. But now if I were to do something like that, I would just, if I were to ever commit a bar chart to a library ever again, to an app, I'm going to have tests for it, and it's going to have waiters, because there's no reason to have like weird animations that don't pause your test suite. You know, it's just like, you kind of feel like you have control over it. It's awesome. Just like you wouldn't with transitioning your router, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, nice. The last video basically does that. It calls register waiter from within the bar chart component, and you have to be get your hands a little dirty, because you need to make it so that your bar chart component tracks the number of running animations, and also if there's any scheduled animations, like animations to be scheduled, like to be initiated. It seems like the counter approach is like the way to kind of do this.
That's what, like how like the Ajax testing works, right?
It seems like that's kind of how everything works. Which kind of makes sense. I mean, it's kind of intuitive, but like, I wouldn't have guessed that before doing this series. Like, I have something that has n number of possible asynchronous side effects. I'm going to use a counter and just know when the counter is zero, I can just assume that they're done. Except for that case where like you may start one at some point in the future, which is kind of tricky. But it seems like that's a good kind of technique to just know. Like, even if you weren't doing Ember or Ember testing or D3 or anything, like just to know I'm dealing with time and asynchronicity or whatever, I'm going to probably need a counter here. Seems like a good general tactic.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, I think you would always start with like a Boolean where it's like true or false. So you start animating and you flip something to true. And then when it ends, you flip it to false.
No, but that's...
But then you do that, and then now you start one animation, then you start another.
Yeah.
The first one finishes before the second one, and so now your Boolean doesn't work here.
Exactly.
But I think given that you're in that spot, you'd be like, oh, a counter would naturally come up. So I think it's unrealistic to be like, oh, you should just know to use a counter here. You start with a Boolean, you get into the tough spot, and then you change to a counter.
Right. But it's good to know that's, I think now if I were to go to do some sort of CSS animation component, I would just start with a counter, because I wouldn't go through that whole path again. Because before, it's like you said, it's like you could imagine D3 exposing some global that's like, is animating true or false? That's really what you want to know. And then like your waiter would just check that. And you're like, oh yeah, that's what I need to like emulate, right? Because that would be like the ideal API. I want to know when has everything finished animating. I just check like a D3 dot is animating is false or something. So I'm going to implement that. But under the hood is a counter. And so like that's kind of how you're thinking about it in the future. So I thought it was pretty useful.
Nice.
But yeah, it's pretty awesome to just be able to test the intermediate states of that. And yeah, really cool. Like made me think of, you know, we've talked about before, if Mirage were running on the server, you had to tell the test to wait for things. Or like, I guess there's the Ajax helper is built in, but like, let's say the test wanted to do something where it like does any sort of communication with a server that takes some time. Now you just know to register waiters. You can do that anywhere you need to. So it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's public API and everything. It's just one of those lesser known things. You know, it's right there in the API docs. I was thinking like it might be a good exercise to just go through all these modules and classes. Who knows what's hidden in there? You know? What skeletons are buried under there?
Nice.
But yeah, so that was pretty neat. And then you're working on forms.
Yeah. We're gonna have validations up this week, the start of validations, which is fun. And it's in the spirit of sort of the entire form series where we're just sort of exposing the building blocks so that you have like these escape hatches where you can just use whatever validation library you want, whatever HTML you want. I think when a lot of folks think of like forms with validations, you think like, oh, my form is in an error state and then I just magically get all these error components. And I think that's what you want to build up to, but you don't want to just start there because you lock yourself into an abstraction.
And we've learned that lesson over and over again.
And we will continue to learn this lesson.
And basically it's better to understand the building blocks, and there's so much power in being able to pre-wire the implicit things between all the elements in a contextual component that it almost feels like, in the same way that we would say, don't reach right for a table add-on right away. Don't reach for a form add-on right away that abstracts this stuff. It's better to understand it and basically build your own form add-on using the primitives that Ember gives you.
Right. And this isn't an argument that like form add-ons or form abstractions or these high-level abstractions are bad. They're not. And we've had a lot of success with them. The argument here is you want to build up with all these building blocks.
So you have escape hatches along the way.
Yeah. Right. And so like an example of this is like when we're showing the validations, you know, Ember is this like reactive, declarative, you know, templating language. So as soon as something changes, the template's going to immediately update. So if you're like editing a first name field and you blank out the field, right away that like property, that first name property is in an error state,
right?
Because it has a blank name. Again, this is assuming that there's a first name must be present validation. Right. And so your template is going to show that error, but that's like, you don't want to show that error. You want to wait till like maybe the user like focuses out or clicks the submit button. And so we build up the,
you expose the state.
Yeah, that's needed to do this.
Think about the lowest level state that a builder would need.
So we have form.didSubmit.
Right.
And then we can wrap that validation in didSubmit. Now, this is like really verbose. It's a lot of boilerplate, but the idea is with this low level stuff, you can build the high level stuff.
Right.
And so we're going to talk about, we're probably not going to build the high level stuff in the series. The series is all about the low level building blocks, this term I keep saying.
Contextual wiring, basically.
Yeah. But we'll talk about towards the end about how you get from this stuff to your high level abstractions.
Right. So, and I think also like you could imagine some of the stuff ending up in Ember, equivalent of form 4 in Rails, but that was much more, you know, that was thought through and like tons of hours went into that to getting that into core. None of the form kind of abstraction add-ons have really won out in the sense that like Ember concurrency has won out for concurrent data handling, right?
Yep.
So I think if something like that had, we're totally on board with like community solutions, right? And you do end up re-implementing a lot of this stuff in every app. But the thing is, like, it's it's hard to get the high level stuff to accommodate every situation. So it's better at this point to understand the low level stuff. But again, there's like a, there's a future where you could imagine even form and exposing the right events in the state of the form, as opposed to just using an HTML form in the same way that we use a input helper instead of an HTML input. You can imagine more and more of this stuff being rolled into Ember.
Yeah.
And I think it should. I mean, I think it would be very helpful if it, if you didn't have to re-implement this. But given the state of things today, it's good to learn this stuff.
You know, it's interesting with our apps. We often copy the form kind of across all of our apps.
Right.
But then we tweak it.
Right.
For the use cases in this app. So like one app we work on, there's like, you want events, you want to fire an action whenever you blur out of, mm-hmm. of a group. So like a label, an input, whatever controls are in that, this thing we call a group. You want to capture that blur out event and then start running validations for that section of the page. And this is something that's like, not all of our apps have this. Some only do it on submit. Yeah, you could imagine
exposing a did blur, and that's fine, but like accommodating every possible thing is really hard. So that's why we keep it low level.
Right.
Unless there was something clearly emerged that could be abstracted, but like, it's just hard to get that stuff right. Like the group label and input stuff that wires the ID, I think that's like awesome. That should be in like every form should have that basically. But then it's like how best to share that in a way that's not going to make you feel like, am I burdened by this abstraction at all?
Right.
So I think that's the kind of thing that could end up back in Ember that would be good too, but it's just like piece by piece. So yeah.
I'm not sure where to draw that line.
Yeah, it's hard. But I do think, yeah, forms still kind of suck. I mean, once you get something that you're happy with, it's awesome. We've had apps where we've ended up through this process that you describe in the series with something we're really happy with and makes the whole team very productive. But
yeah, I think that I will say like the reason forms suck so much is because when you're first want to start building your form, you're going to immediately jump to those high level APIs and then get locked into them. And so
it's also like once you've done this a few times, you kind of know where you're going. You have the experience for it. And so it makes it easier. But there should be a way to share that with people who haven't gone through that before.
Sure.
I think it just requires a lot more work than like, oh, just throw this up on GitHub. There's a lot there.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but that's really cool. Yeah, I love the series. It's really, really, really good videos. And there's some other series that we could build off of it. Deeper dive into validations. And then the other one we talked about was basically the higher level kind of model aware form, where it's similar to something you'd see in Rails, where it's like form for model. and it shows error messages kind of by default. This is where like the idea of the whole app is really important. You know, from the back end, like what the shape of the error data is, all the way to how you render an error message on an input. And like, that's really hard. That's why, because everyone does so many pieces of that pipeline differently, is why this hasn't been abstracted yet. And so I think it's easier for like, maybe it's easier for a Ruby on Rails framework to just say, here's how you do it, because they control the whole stack. They control the request looks like, the response, so they can have a high level API that says form for model.errors, and you're not going to care about how any of the data is going across the wire. I mean, basically you don't have to think about that, right? Like if you take vanilla Rails back in the day, you're rendering a form and you're rendering like form for model.errors. You don't actually care about the shape of the data.
No,
your controller method wasn't even looking at params like the shape the way we do today, right?
So no, because I'm using an active record model, and the contract is active record models have dot errors.
Right. And they have a serialization format that ends up in the DOM, and Rails is taking care of turning that into an instance of an active record model on the server, like in the controller method. Right. So you're not like, where are the errors stored? Like where it was the way we have to say, what's the shape of the JSON payload in order to render the errors correctly and associate them with the models correctly. Like Rails is, since they control the whole stack, they can just say model.errors is going to give you the error string. And then your controller, so you'll be able to render it on the client, and then in the server, model is going to be an instantiated active record model that has the errors in the state on it, and you don't have to think. But because like Ember has to accommodate any kind of JSON payload then you lose the ability to make some of those higher level abstractions.
I mean, just bring it back to what we just talked about, though. I think you want to build this with those tiny escape hatches.
Right, but the reason you have to is because there's so much flexibility at every layer.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yes, but I will say that Ember over-indexed on this stuff, and there's too much. You can't.
Jack of all trades, master none.
You can't drop down and say, like, this thing is an error. And this payload is an error when it comes back from the server.
Yeah.
You can't, but there should be.
I agree. It would be worse for some people and much, much better for a minority.
Let me think about that. It'd be worse for some people.
Like, if you made Rails isn't as flexible as just taking building blocks.
Yes.
And backend team doesn't get to decide what the ID column is called on their database. So that makes Rails better for the people who buy into Rails and worse for people who care about flexibility. But it makes it much, much better for the people who just buy into Rails, because now I get to just display errors and I don't care about any of the stuff in between.
Yep.
With Ember and in general with front-end frameworks today, since there's so few opinions across the request response cycle in the stack, that's where a lot of this wiring comes from.
I wonder if there's a thing where there's so many opinions that you can say, like, there's so much here that we can't be opinionated, because
I mean, certainly, yeah. Certainly, like, you can't just jump in on JSON API because you don't know about GraphQL yet. And so if you just say, we're for JSON API, then you just lock people out of GraphQL. And I know people are using Ember with GraphQL successfully. I know Netflix is. So I get that. At the same time, yeah, there's a lot of problem. Like, there's a lot of things that have been difficult because of the flexibility, because there's too much optionality at every step. You could imagine, like, not a version of Ember, but you could just imagine more opinionated kind of setups where the abstractions are easier to write because you're working in a more constrained environment. So think about the form for abstraction, this kind of theoretical add-on. First of all, you just say JSON API, boom, you're done. So you already have eliminated a ton of the complexity of this add-on.
Server errors.
Yeah.
Are easy to do now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just one example.
Okay.
The meta point I'm trying to make is that the problem space of add-on docs is like not even that big, and that is already super hard to support because of the unknown unknowns. And so every little thing that you add that expands the problem space means that your abstraction is exponentially harder to get right. So solving something like a good form of abstraction in as unconstrained an environment as Ember's is going to be very, very difficult. So what's the answer? Given you're working in an unconstrained environment, stick with low-level stuff, because getting the wrong abstraction is way more painful and you're going to get boxed in. It's going to have a hard time. At the same time, good abstractions are very powerful and worth a lot. I really believe in good abstractions. I think they're worth pursuing. So there's a tension here, right? Where it's like, stay away from.
But why can't you get the good abstraction for using those
low-level things? You can, but I think it's a better or maybe faster way is to constrain your environment. So to set up constraints that you have and say, whatever it is, storefront only works with JSON API. Add-on docs only works with a design that looks like this. You know what I'm saying?
I don't even know which side I'm arguing for right now. I'm just going to throw out thoughts, but like those constraints are super costly when there's like a lot of volatility, when things change. And we saw this with Ember, like Ember blocked into JSON API and then GraphQL came out,
right?
And that constraint now it just sucks.
Would it have been better for Ember to say, what the thing is though, did Ember really go all in on JSON API, or do they still support?
No, they went halfway in.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, so what if they went all the way in?
Would be better.
Yeah.
Would be way better.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay. Right, right. The one foot in, 1 foot out.
Yeah, exactly. Go all in. And then if you make a mistake, then you say, okay, we're done there. Let's go all in on the next thing. I'm kind of speaking like, I'm not saying that this is what I actually believe through and through. I understand there's nuance here. I'm not speaking as if there's nuance, but at the same time, I do think every library is going to have bad abstractions. Is going to have abstractions that get improved over time is another way of saying that. Yeah, like yeah. They're not going to be in their final form. They're going to change over time. Maybe HTTP is done, but you know, other than that.
So I was just reading something about HTTP 3. So
yeah, there you go. So given that, it's just a function. The probability of successful abstraction is a function of the problem space and the complexity of the problem space and how unconstrained it is. And so you want to maximize your likelihood of ending up with a good abstraction, you need to constrain your environment. And it might be better to take on two super constrained environments separately than try to join them together. So you can try to do your thing for a super constrained environment. It's a subset of Ember apps. It's Ember apps that use JSON API that render forms in this way, that have models in this way, you know, that use Ember data. Like Ember apps that use Ember data and JSON API right there. Right there, you have a much more constrained environment. Every time you save data, you're calling model.save. What if you just knew that? You can't guarantee that. Even Mirage is more complex because it has to support non-Ember data back, all sorts of stuff. Part of its value is that, but also you could imagine what would we have if we hadn't had to do that, right? We would have been able to move forward.
I'm coming around to this because I just had this thought of what if Ember only worked with Rails?
Yeah, exactly.
That
you had talked about that before.
A lot of people. A lot of Ember users would be upset by that, but
yes.
But what if Ember only worked with Rails? How much better would its APIs be? How much better would its guarantees be?
Yeah. Yeah. It would be.
How much happier would Ryan be?
that's really the KPI we should be optimizing for. No, I totally agree. I totally agree. On the flip side, if you have something that works for everyone, React, it's going to solve a much smaller piece of the pie. So it's just, its problem space is naturally, it is a more constrained environment because it doesn't, you say, what about data fetching and loading? And it says, that's not me at all, right? Mm-hmm. I think Ember for Rails would be awesome. A JavaScript framework for Rails would be awesome if anyone wants to make that. It would be great.
Okay, I'm convinced.
Oh, nice. That only took 20 minutes. You got to have stronger opinions, buddy. I didn't realize I could change your mind that easy.
Hey, you told me Ember for Rails, and now I'm on board.
So it's tough. So anyways, thinking back to like you're an Ember app developer, and you're working on this thing and you want to make it easy and you want to abstract things, just know that the problem space affects things. Making it work right for everyone affects things. This is why maybe there is no good form add-on that exists for everyone. But we do believe that you can end up with a Acme form add-on that works amazing for you. It's super constrained. Yeah. And that's what we do basically with every app. We basically start out with, there's some lower level things that are shared. The wiring behind the scenes that we talked about, but then there's these things that are specific to the app, and we feel like that's right now, today, that's the best approach.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's kind of the lesson from the series, I think. And it's good. Like contextual components give you the power to do this kind of thing as an app developer. Whereas before, imagine making Form 4 yourself within Rails if Form 4 didn't exist. The primitives weren't right for it. Imagine making Form 4 in Rails before it existed, right? The primitives, that wasn't the goal of Rails. Rails wasn't trying to enable app developers to make abstractions like that.
Wait, you're saying before Rails, try to make Form 4 and like your...
In Rails before Form 4 existed in Rails. So before there was a high-level form abstraction in Rails.
Yeah.
Try to make a high-level abstract form abstraction in Rails that worked as generically good as Rails Form 4 did. Or even just was along the same lines. What I'm saying is things like contextual components and yields enable app developers to make powerful abstractions. And I don't think Rails is really about that as much as it is about let's find the 95% of things we're all doing and roll it back into the framework together.
Yes. Yep.
DHH wouldn't want to see a bunch of Rails apps and have them all doing forms differently.
Right. Every app has their own custom form implementation. Yes.
Right.
That would be a bad thing for Rails.
Whereas I think in Ember, we are in a much less constrained environment, and therefore things like yields and contextual components are more important because it's more important for app developers and teams to be able to make their own abstractions.
Yep.
Because the environment is just so unconstrained. So that's why we think it's worth learning these things so that you can end up with your Acme form that works well for you.
When you say environment is unconstrained, that's like a big thing for me to wrap my head around. And because I just immediately go to like you're crossing like an HTTP boundary.
Yeah. But if you could even just think just client side, really. But it's how do you get data? How, even if you're on the client side of the boundary, how, what does the data look like? What format is it in? Is it normalized, right? Is it or was it denormalized? What is it normalized, right? Deduped.
You're talking like...
That's just one assumption. That's one part of the... That's one aspect of the environment. Are you working like... Are you getting back, AMS style or... Don't some of the graph... Isn't the raw GraphQL responses not normalized? Like they would have the same...
They could duplicate. And,
data. Or is it JSON API style where you can... Do you have a guarantee that it's normalized? Therefore, does my client side identity map cache situation need to worry about denormalizing or not? Or does my, like, do my errors have to, like, do I have, right? So even just from that, even if you're on that side, the assumptions you can make about the format of the data hugely affect the abstraction. And then beyond that, you know, do you even have an ORM? Do you have models? Again, how do you save data? Is there one interface for saving and loading data? That's huge.
Yeah.
If you can say it's always model.save, then your abstraction can be much better. Because the environment is less unconstrained, it's more constrained.
And I guess too, being an Ember developer, we kind of have a bunch of these boundaries already drawn for us. Like we know that there's the identity map over here and the UI yields contextual components over here. But if you're building a form from scratch with none of this stuff, it's really hard to draw those boundaries, really hard to draw those lines.
Right. So. Right. Totally. And like, validation state, you want it live, but you want to delay it. So you need to understand what the state is and what can affect that state. There's just so many things. So, you know, you and I are used to thinking about resources and how we can do CRUD operations on them. But a lot of folks just have one-off API endpoints that they...
No, this is a constraint that we've introduced to all of our apps because we know how easy it makes app development, even though there's some times where it's hard to map the action you want to do to a CRUD operation.
Right.
So if you want to like publish a video or publish a talk,
right.
You just want an endpoint that's like video/1/publish. Right. And I post to that and then all the magic happens in the back.
Or you just kind of get requests of that.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A GET request. Yeah.
But we've learned, you know, through our experience that if you can create a publication resource and create it, well, not only do you get like a lot of nice things out of that, it just makes it easier because you already have an architecture set up for performing CRUD operations on resources and that map to the HTTP verbs that your backend understands. So this is a constraint that we introduce ourselves, but we self-impose it. It's not actually imposed by the framework, if you think about it.
Yep.
You can import $ and do $.getJSON.
I mean, there's add-ons that let you...
Yeah. Yeah. Non-CRUD operations. So you could imagine a framework that actually imposes this by design. Like catches any AJAX request that doesn't go through. This is going to be my framework that I'm going to make. It's going to be like the heavy-handed, like the Czar Selikov framework. And you can only make AJAX requests through these four methods. And if I catch you doing any $ like window XML HTTP request or fetch, then I just like throw an error and just shut down your application.
There's like these old commercials. They're like Geico commercials where like Dikembe Mutombo, it's like basketball player. Yeah. Like he would like block stuff and then say like, no. Yeah, so that's what I'm imagining your add-on doing.
Of course, the flip side of this is what we talked about last week, which is when you are using Czar Selikov UIPs and UI containers, that those abstractions were breaking down when you're trying to implement a new design. So that gets back to the cost of the bad abstraction. But I think the key here is like, yeah, you either take an extremely small part of an unconstrained environment or you force constraints upon an environment and then make an abstraction, a high level abstraction around it.
Why can't I have both? Why can't I start with building blocks and then as those building blocks start to solidify, like right. form.didSubmit and form.isSubmitting.
Group.label or whatever.
Yeah, they just kind of work everywhere. Yeah. Why can't I start to then build another layer on top? And every time I build a layer, the layer, imagine it like a triangle.
Yeah.
Where it gets like smaller and smaller. Right.
But you still have these few escape hatches for right. when you're inevitably get the abstraction wrong.
So if I need to go down to that last layer, the API space is really wide. Right. And there's like a lot of bookkeeping
right.
and everything I need to do myself.
Right.
But I can get down to that. I mean,
you can.
Level.
I guess the question is how fast can we roll the shared solutions back into the community? So like
it would take forever.
It does take forever.
Every app we work on would just be like part of figuring out the next layer.
Yeah. I mean, that is what happens today though. So like what's his name? Andrew Clark tweeted about this on React, right? And he was like, we do so much and spend so much time like undigging ourselves from these bad abstractions just to avoid copying code. And again, on the one hand, I can totally agree with that. And I can look at abstractions I've written that are horrible and cause a lot of pain. On the other hand, it's like, well, React, Ember, whatever, solved a ton of problems. And like, we could all keep copying and pasting our render methods from our backbone views that call $.innerText, but we don't anymore because we have declarative rendering. And that's an extremely, extremely good thing. So I think the question is, yeah, how do you get to those good abstractions best?
I mean,
and sometimes I feel like people are too,
you want to optimize for experiments. You yeah. want to optimize yeah. for people trying different things. It's the only way you'll ever figure right. these good abstractions out.
Yeah. Tinkering.
Yeah.
Trying things out. But you got to try things out. You can't just not try things out. So that's why tweets like that kind of make me upset, because we spend so much time on dumb things that will one day be abstracted away. I guarantee it.
You're saying
writing text into an editor.
Can I try to rephrase what you just said? Yeah. Like you're saying, like even we spend so much time on stupid abstractions, and even though we're going to, you know, invent 900 stupid abstractions, it's all worth it because the one abstraction we do come up with, something like declarative rendering, yes. is going to pay off. It's yes. it's just
dividends. Perpetuity.
And it shadows all that yeah. other, all the 900 stupid things
yeah,
that we
demolishes invented. It. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So yeah.
I mean, I totally buy that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So at the same time, abstractions can be costly. Bad abstractions can be very costly. Yeah. I don't know the answer. I mean, there's a certain subgroup of people who are good at writing abstractions, like,
and just give them all the money.
Yehudas and the Dan Abrams and all those. Yeah, just let them figure it all out. yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm in an unsatisfying intellectual position here, and I haven't resolved it yet.
I think you want stuff that lets you experiment.
Yeah.
And
I also, the thing is, I think everyone would say, yeah, we should experiment and tinker. I do feel like there might be a philosophical disagreement or different positions here around where you think about this. So you think about like DHH and to some extent Yehuda on the one side and folks who like the lower level stuff on the other side. So I don't know if it's, I think both those people would say, yeah, tinker and experiment, that's great. But how do they feel about abstractions kind of in the large, I get. I'm trying to think how I would say this. How do they feel about like the higher level notion of an abstraction and how important it is? And I think someone like DHH would say it's very important.
Yeah.
And I don't know if everyone would agree with him on that. So I want to find those people who are actually doing the work today and learn about this from them and see how they're approaching this. I mean, that's the thing. React is, even though it's low level, it's changing over time. It's getting better. It's introducing more abstractions. So it's not like they don't believe in abstractions, even though they will say, use the lowest level thing, avoid abstractions. What was the talk by one of the React core team members about this.
Sebastian.
Yeah. What was the talk called? Not Dom as a second class citizen. It was the other one. It was like basically always use like JavaScript APIs and don't try to abstract away with them. But at the same time, they are abstracting away them with features in React. And there's a ton of features that came out this year. So yeah, it's just an interesting, I feel like there's a nuance here that's not captured when people start talking about this.
Right.
And when, for example, Andrew tweets that about stop writing abstractions, just copy and paste your code. I get what he's saying. He's probably seen a lot of really bad abstractions. You know, I mean, there's like thousands of engineers at a company like Facebook, and people are going to be writing all sorts of things. They could have just copied it and pasted and saved someone a couple hours of time, maybe more. But there's still like part of our job should be to move. The only way you're going to move forward is if we don't have to wire this stuff up with our forms each and every time we write an app. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah. I mean, you can't just group all abstractions into one bucket.
Right.
Yeah. So
maybe it's just like, GraphQL is doing very well, right? It's very popular. It's taken hold a lot. So maybe let's just say there's a future. I love JSON API. This has nothing to do with JSON API, but the mindshare right now is with GraphQL. Let's just suppose for sake of argument, you flash forward and basically GraphQL is the only way people are transmitting data across the wire. So now you kind of have moved up, and when you learn web development, you don't really learn about $.getJSON anymore.
Maybe you don't even learn about HTTP.
Yeah.
Is that too bold of a statement?
Yeah. The way, so you have this data on the client, a JavaScript object you want to save. Here's how you do it. You import mutation from the window.mutation.save, and then in your backend, you just give it an endpoint, and in your backend, you have the data. So you don't, as a query, you have the mm-hmm. you have the backend as a mutation, which you would commit to a GraphQL database. So now you're not talking about shape of data ever. You never have a shape of data argument with front end and back end engineers ever again. You never talk about schema. You don't talk about headers. You just have queries and mutations that you send back and forth through like platform APIs.
So if you say this, you're like, you know, you put me in a time machine, you send me the future. That's awesome. Like that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
I love that. The problem is that today when we try to do that, this is kind of like what we always talk about, but today if we try to do that, we get it wrong.
Right.
And then now we're stuck.
Right.
And it's awful. But yeah, I mean.
But you don't always get it wrong.
That picture that you're painting in the future is amazing.
Right.
And that's.
We don't need spacer GIFs anymore. We can use box shadow and CSS. It's a great world to live in. But like maybe. What was the layout engine that got like replaced by Flex and Grid? There was like other layouts that came to CSS that like were not as good. Or like IndexedDB, not IndexedDB. Is IndexedDB the caching thing in JavaScript in the browser that everyone hates now? App cache,
yeah. I think IndexedDB is like a
IndexedDB database. Is like a database, yeah. Fine, yeah. App cache. Everyone hates it. App cache, right?
Because they like Service Worker?
I guess so,
yeah.
But app cache is part of the platform, right?
Sure, I don't know.
I think it is, but I think it's an example of like what people would say today is like it was wrong or something like that. So I don't know. It's tough. It's hard. I feel like we need a lot. Also, like Gary Bernhardt, seeing him tweet about tooling and stuff, and he's like, I know how to do computers. I'm not going to use tools anymore. But again, on the same day, I can agree with that. And then later be like, we need so many more tools. We need so many more abstractions. We need to be working at such a higher level. Programmers waste our time
on
so many low-level things. Yeah, it's insane.
We do, but all that stuff needs to come from real applications.
Yeah, I agree with that. Extensible web manifesto, basically. But that's not... That's not like a independent variable in the terms of economics. That's not an exogenous variable. It's not just a rate of innovation that's given to you from the outside, right? It's a function of people's beliefs about abstractions. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you can say tinkering is the way to find abstractions. But you can also just be tinkering and not looking for abstractions, or just building apps and not looking for abstractions. But if people thought differently about abstractions while they were tinkering, they would be doing different things.
Okay. I was just thinking, there's no code base I've ever worked on where the team of programmers, both collectively and individually, didn't try to create a billion different abstractions. And this is true with us and myself. Yeah. But like, like, people love,
you don't have,
there's something in our DNA about creating abstractions. We love abstractions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. Maybe we'll figure this out next week.
What?
I just want there to be more good abstractions in the world. Is that too much to ask?
No.
Okay, good. That's all I want to know. Is that too much to ask? That's all I want. That's all I want to say. We were going to talk about outside in stuff, and we got on this whole conversation.
Abstractions are a rabbit hole. Never bring up abstractions.
Never bring up abstractions. All I wanted to say is you should do everything outside in. You should just do everything outside in, starting from the tweet you're going to send about your new project down to the UI, down to the back end. All right, we'll talk about that next week. Thanks for tuning in this week. If you like what you hear, you can find our show notes on embermap.com. You can give us a review and rating on iTunes. It'll help other people find the show. Listen to us ramble for 42 minutes every week. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.